C1A. Number 11A.
Let me just recapitulate what she says in Life as Mind. She showed that Jesus came and proved that life is God, that life is indestructible, that the law of mind cannot be altered. You see, that it is, that life is a law which just cannot be changed and therefore not be destroyed. Second, that if it cannot be destroyed, therefore it must be spiritual, because if it would be material, you could destroy matter. Matter can be destroyed and we could destroy life. So the necessary consequence of the first is that this life which is indestructible must be spiritual, and that that life which is spiritual is the only life, and therefore never mingles with its opposite, with matter, sin, and death. Then he goes on to the third and says something very lovely. I first want to read it. Jesus sent forth 70 students at one time, but only 11 left a desirable historic record. Tradition credits him with 200 or 300 other disciples who have left no name, no record. Many are called, but few are chosen. They fell away from grace. Why? Because they never truly understood their master's instruction. You see, falls always back on principle, their master's instruction, the principle, what he taught, what he interpreted. If we don't understand that, we have no life. We have no real life. We have no real record. We have no real life. Well, you can say there are many people who have never understood Jesus' instruction. They live, yes, they live, but they are dead as a dodo. Life is God. Life is not matter. Yes, the material life goes on. Just as these disciples out of the 70, these, 59 went on living, but only 11 lived. They left a really desirable historical record. Out of the 200 or 300 other disciples, well, they lived there. Perhaps a jolly good time, perhaps a jolly hard time, but they lived, but they left no name. They left no life. Because life, a soul, says something quite definite. Says life always identifies itself. Therefore, life has always a record, and has always what record? A desirable. You see, you get the touch of soul, of satisfaction, a desirable record. On what ground? Always on the ground of spiritual understanding, of truly understanding. You see, that spiritual understanding, truly understanding the master's instruction. If we have spiritual understanding, we leave behind us a true record, a true history. You see, it says Christian science and Christian scientists must have a history. If we don't leave a history behind ourselves, it's only because we haven't lived. We haven't lived. Life, but what means it, we haven't lived? Life means that we understand truly, spiritually, what life is. Then life can identify itself through man. Only when we have that access of atoning ourselves through spiritual understanding with life, then life does identify itself through man, through the true man. And we leave behind a true record. Now, every year there are millions and millions of people existing on this earth, but they don't leave a life record, true life record. But if we are going the way of the world and investigate science and being, we have the most beautiful journey before us, a journey of adventure and discovery, a journey, a way which every year and every decade brings us into new aspects and vistas of being, and they identify themselves in our lives, and that's our true history. Just as you see in the textbook as Mrs. Eddy's history. If I think of Mrs. Eddy, I couldn't think better of her, I think, at the moment than of thinking about the order of the textbook, the structure of the textbook. That was a historical record of the first magnitude. It is the identification of the divine principle of science which took place in the form of the textbook. That's the history of Mrs. Eddy. All that other thing which one makes such a lot about her, what she wore and how she dressed herself and how she looked like and the hair and everything and how she looked after the meals and the kitchen and the maids and so on, all that is just nothing compared with that spiritual life which has nothing to do with her person, but with her true life. Principle, divine principle, identifying itself as a textbook. That's a record. And so we too will see that we feel that our life has a history the moment we go that way of life. Because that way of life will reveal stage after stage something newer, brighter, grander, vaster, and that builds the history, the true history of man. Christian scientists must have a history. If we go away from this world without leaving a history, we haven't yet proved that tone of life as soul. Because life can't help being soul, and soul can't help identifying itself. Just can't help it. It just can't help it. So these students, they fell away from grace. See, they fell away from what? From grace. We know grace as an idea of life. Why? Because it says each one of us has access to the whole, to life. So that's the grace, that we don't have to work. What was Paul's, to the Romans, definition? It is grace and not the labor of works or something like that. I have no good Bible scholar here. It is the great theme of Paul to the Romans was that thing that he showed that Jesus Christ brought grace and not... Yes, well, let's just leave it if it doesn't come naturally into my mind. But you always know what I mean. That's the beauty of it. That it's not the hard tilling of the soil to get into heaven, but that it is that wonderful sense which we have felt right from the beginning of the textbook of that unity with God, that's grace, that we have access to the whole of being. Life is infinite and we don't have to earn it. It's a fact. That's our grace. And that we have access to the whole of life without earning it, without earning it. Without human merit. All right, yes, yes. Thank you, Muriel. So let's just see. They fell away from grace. I always feel that I fall away from grace the moment I consider my life as a human life. And I think I have fallen away from grace. The moment I feel that my life has to do with my name, with my body, with my past, with my character, with my idiosyncrasies, with my heredity, with my past, with my parents. If I think about that, I feel I have fallen away from grace. See, I have fallen away from what Mrs. Eddy has shown as life as mind and life as spirit. If I don't stick to that, soul says stick to it. If I don't stick to it, I fall away. This is the tone of soul again. I fall away from that wonderful inheritance which is given to me by grace. That it says, you have been before Abraham was, you have been before Adam was, you are as old as God. That's your initial being, your true being, your Ur-Dasein, what will you call it? Well, your original being, you know. That's your primeval being. That's what is life, you see. If we start there, if we start our sense of our life with God as life, indestructible, never been born into matter, never working in matter, never have been born in matter, never have been educated in matter, never have lived in matter. If I have that sense, then I'm sticking to grace. Then that life identifies itself in the most beautiful way, because then it's God's life, and God's life is always beautiful. And I fall away from grace if I don't do that. If I consider my life anything else but that divine life, that's falling away from grace. So that's why it says, many are called, everybody is called, but few are chosen. Everybody has access, that's the grace of life, has access to the whole of life, to the infinitude of life, but few choose it. Few are chosen because few choose that way of life. Most don't take it. Most take the other way, and they take the human life as their life and want to improve the human life and the material life and the corporeal life, and that's falling away from grace. Now, we say these things, I know, we say them, but they are really the pith and worthwhile thinking about them and pondering about them until they become us. they become more and more us. Until they become identified with us, then they have the nature of spiritual understanding, and then they refute within us any other sense of life. Any other sense of material life, of past life, of a rotten life, of a dirty life, of a this life and that life. They refute that and establish the claims of truth. That's what spiritual understanding always says, and establishes our pure, untouched sense of divine life. Then we get somewhere. Then we really get somewhere. Then we feel it, that we have got somewhere. So he goes on to principle. And this tone of principle takes you three paragraphs along. They are the most interesting paragraphs. Perhaps that next time I may have a bit more time to stay on these three when you have studied them and when you have been acquainted with them. But you will feel something very, very clear and scientific about it, because it has three paragraphs. And the main tone in it is this, that atonement demands demonstration of the divine principle of life, and not the profession to a doctrine. You see, we come now to principle. That this life really must be based on a principle of life and not on a doctrinal belief in life. And what she confronts here is therefore demonstration and profession. Demonstration of the principle of life and profession to a human sense of life. And when you go through it, you will see that in these three paragraphs, she recapitulates more or less the preceding three subtones of life and mind, life and spirit, life and soul, and recapitulates it and says, if I want to put it into a nutshell, and says, the world takes these three false sense of life, that life is destructible, that life therefore is under the law of is dependent on material laws. Second, that life is in matter, held in matter. And third, that life must not be understood, that it is just is, that life is as it goes on, that it's just haphazard, that you don't need to understand life, spirit to understand life, that life is given to you and it just goes on. And it takes these three false concepts of life and makes a principle out of it. See, principle always in principle, we always have the summing up of the first three and making that its principle. So the world makes this false sense of life its principle. And what Mrs. Eddy says, and that is the persecution. That is that which holds back that the divine life goes on. See, the moment, or let's put the other way around to make it perhaps clear. Takes first the positive. The positive would say here, if we take life as mind, life as indestructible, life as spirit, life always in and of spirit, life as soul, life always identifying itself happily, satisfactorily. If we take that as our principle, then we come to principle. If we take that as our governing principle, if we take that as our governing factor in life, then life is based on the power of principle and therefore goes on. Therefore, then life is empowered to carve the way of life. Then we have entrusted and authorized ourselves with the principle of life. And that principle of life always demonstrates itself. Therefore, how does it demonstrate itself as life? That it tracks us on, that it pushes us on, that we have a way of life. See, the counterfeit is shown like this. She says, the counterfeit is that the world doesn't believe in that sense of life, that the world's sense of life believes that life can be destroyed. Second, that life is material, can be held back in matter. Third, that life must not be understood. And she shows that if we accept that as our principle of life, as our guidance in life, if we take that as our governing thought or attitude in life, that helps us back at every stage. That is not pushing us forward, that doesn't bring us anywhere, but that holds us back. You always have in this paragraph to hold back. You will always feel, learn about that holding back, that hindering. See, that nothing happens. So If we would like that our life has a future, that our life goes forward, spiritually forward, material, it always goes forward until it is dead. But that's not going forward. So going forward to death is not really going forward anywhere, I feel. Going forward is only there where we go into life, where we step from life into life, and from life into higher life, and into more life. That's going forward. If we want to go forward, if we want to have that push of the divine principle as life, then, she says, well, we can have that the moment, and we have that the moment, we take life and mind, life and spirit, life and soul as our principle. That pushes us on. If we don't take that as our principle, if we take the opposite as our principle, then she says, that's the persecution. That holds you back. That tracks you back. That tracks you back. That doesn't want you to go on. That is that which doesn't want that you outgrow your human life. You just ponder that when you are at home. Perhaps we'll go too much into detail to go on. But it's lovely. It's in two ways lovely, from the letter and from the spirit. It's lovely from the letter because it shows how enormously exact that textbook is. I'm not surprised that Mrs. Eddy, up to her last years, always said, I don't know, that she was not aware what she wrote when she wrote it, that she only afterwards learned what she wrote it, because no human mind could have written that thing. So we get from the letter, we get that wonderful conviction and comfort that it was principle writing the page, that it was principle interpreting itself through that clean window pane with which she described herself, that she was willing to let the light shine through. But what the light really was, what she really wrote, that remained to be discovered even for her. And it remains to be discovered for us even more. But if we just see at these things, we are just amazed how exact these laws of the seven and the order of the seven just recur and recur, always in the same exactness, but always in a different hue, always with a different purpose, always showing us another touch of it. See, we always thought that the days of creation, always in the days of creation, you knew, only in the symbolism of it, that the fourth day was always gathering together the symbols of the first, second, and third day. Always is a symbol. The light, the firmament, and the earth, the dry land, were gathered together in the fourth day, related. And so we have seen always that what makes up the fourth day is really that we take the first, the second, and the third day together as our principle. That's the fourth day. If we take the first, the second, and the third as our governing, guiding principle, that's the fourth day. And here again you see, in the positive and in the negative, in a very wonderful way. And it explains to us what really is that which holds us back in our life. What makes us stall? What makes us give that feeling that we don't go anywhere? Well, it isn't that God isn't good to us. It is because we have fallen away from grace. That makes us stop and that makes us halt. But she says, what makes us to go on? What drives us on is life as principle. Life as principle, because life is irresistible, is irrepressible. Life goes on. God goes on. God doesn't ask us if we like to go on or not. God does go on. And if we want to go on with him and experience that, we jolly well have to atone with God. Atone with God. How to atone with God? We have to atone with his nature of life as mind, which says life is a law, cannot be destroyed. Life as spirit, life is always spiritual, and therefore our material life had never anything to do with the real life. And life as soul, which says, all right, then let me, through spiritual understanding, identify myself with that life which is spiritual, which is indestructible, then I have really life. And if I have that in my innermost understanding and conviction, then that is my principle, and that has power. That has power. That drives me on. How does it drive me on? Well, we come to life as life, and when we come to life as life, we always get that sacrifice, you know? And here it comes. It comes in its tone and says, yes, it drives us on and on, but it drives us through the bitter cup of the Eucharist. Namely, the world will not understand it. Not the single component part of Jesus' character did the world measure aright. That's the tone of life as life. That is what happened with us, that when life as principle pushes us on, it pushes us into new fields of adventure. It pushes us into new fields of spiritual realm. And because it pushes us into a new spiritual realm, the old realm, the material sense of life, will never understand it, will never appreciate it, will never value it, will always misrepresent it, will always misunderstand it, will always persecute it. There is no atonement of the world sense of life and the divine sense of life. There is no such a thing. Jesus couldn't demonstrate it. There is no atonement of truth and error. There is no atonement between the world sense of life and the divine sense of life. There will be always that gap where the world will never measure aright a single component part of what we do in the divine life. Never. And that's the cross we have to carry. Because the human mind in us would like that this divine line, the divine life, is acknowledged and valued and appreciated by the world. It will never be. If it ever will be, then we know we are on the wrong track. That's what we did. And we are on the wrong track. Because it would be against life as life. Here she says, not a single component part. Everything what Jesus did, the world misinterpret. Everything he did was misinterpreted. Even his righteousness and purity did not hinder men from saying he's a glutton and a friend of the impure and Beelzebub is his pet. Well, if he hadn't done it, we can't do it either. So you see, that wonderful sense of life which comes in and which is for the human mind so difficult to stomach and where we have such difficulties sometimes, but we have to go through that. We have to give the proof of our worthiness, as she shows afterwards, namely that we are willing to follow the way of life, the divine way of life, no matter how much the world will acknowledge it. What does it say? It says the divine way of life will have no support, no aid from the world's sense of life. We just don't have to wait and try to demonstrate that the world's sense of life will be at one with the divine sense of life, will not support. They will misconstrue it, and that's in their nature to misconstrue it. And it is our job to stand above it, and it's our job to be exalted above it, to be untouched by it, not to be worried about it, and so on. But that's what we have to drink. That's the cup we have of bitterness which we have to drink to the dregs. But can you see where life is leading us to? You see, I love the tone of life because it's so practical, so near to us. I know that our lives would be so different, that we would be so different in our whole makeup and everything if we would really exemplify inwardly and outwardly that sense of life. If, you see, that order is wonderful. It starts first with the general statement of life. In life as mind, life as spirit, life as soul, it gives us the general statement of life, saying life is indestructible, it's the law. Second, life is spiritual, it never mingles with matter. Third, it says life must be something which is spiritually understood. Life is not haphazard. You say haphazard or haphazard?
No, haphazard.
A difficult language, English, you know. It's not haphazard. That's the general statement of life. Then, having taken that general statement, we come and say, do I make that general statement my principle? If I make it my principle, then I'm linked up, I'm bound to that principle of life, and therefore life pushes me on. It demonstrates me. If it demonstrates me, it leads me into an absolute new field of life. I come to life as life, where there is no support from the world's sense of life. Why should I have the world's support of sense of life? Why should I be worried about the world's sense of life if I have taken my whole life from God? Why should I then afterwards try to find appreciation and support from its opposite? I wouldn't. So if we feel persecution, if we feel misapprehension, misvaluation from the world, it's only because we have not gone through the first four subtones properly. Because if we would have gone through those properly, we would never dream of finding appreciation from anything but God. We wouldn't. So it's all a matter of how much we drink the cup, how much we are willing to lay down a false sense of life. If we do, we get exalted. Then, you see, that's why Jesus at that point of life could say, I drink no more of this cup until I drink it anew. But then in the kingdom of God, no more in the kingdom of earth. Then I drink it anew in the kingdom of God. Then I drink it and find my inspiration and my happiness and my satisfaction in the spiritual appreciation in God, where I feel God loves me, where I feel God is jolly happy about me. God is jolly satisfied with what I do. Then I feel the appreciation from God, not from the world. That's life is life.